sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide.
Hey, this is Shorelines Radio. You're tuning in with Chandler, Alex, and Robert.
You're really super mellow today.
Yeah.
That's like... Doo-doo-doo. Yeah, right? Liven up. Liven up. We're going to have to get a 2x4 from outside. And
hey, guys. Welcome to Shorelines.
There you go. Perfect. All right.
What's Shorelines all about?
Fishing from the shore. And wherever you can get to on your feet, I guess.
Fishing or catching?
Ideally catching, but most of the time fishing.
All right, I'm ready to learn.
So what are we going to learn about today?
Well, I figured it would be a good time to start talking about sheep's head.
I've heard of those.
Yeah.
I've heard they're showing back up.
Well, sheep's head is one of those species that we have in South Florida that's not a sheep head that everyone's used to up north. You know, this one's actually a totally different species of animal. This one's actually extremely edible. And 100% targetable from land, you know, but it is a wintertime fish down here in Florida. You know, it's not readily available throughout the whole summertime. They definitely like the colder water.
So, yeah. Something to look forward to in the upcoming months, definitely.
Right. We're still early because the water temperatures are warm here, but, you know, throughout the whole wintertime, anywhere you go pretty much in Florida from the Panhandle all the way down to the Keys, you can find them. They get a little bit less abundant in the Keys, but the eastern seaboard and the whole Gulf, pretty available.
Right on.
And where are you going to find them at?
Primarily around structure.
Okay.
Oyster beds, barnacles.
Barnacles?
I think.
Aren't barnacles usually associated with structure?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. They don't grow by themselves.
No.
Basically, any type of piling, oyster bar, seawalls, any type of habitat that has barnacles and oysters on it.
Yeah. The primary part of their diet is crustaceans, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I mean, they'll eat some marine worms and stuff, I'm sure, but for the most part, it's...
Crabs are their absolute favorite.
Yeah.
You know, and going out and catching crabs or buying crabs can sometimes be tricky both ways.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, crabs? All crabs?
Small crabs, because they are pretty small fish,
okay.
And they have a fairly small mouth, even in relation to the size of their body. But their teeth are designed for crushing hard-shelled things. You know, barnacles is one of the food items that they like to eat a lot of. But they also eat, like you said, marine worms and crabs, but their teeth are almost like molars, and they can actually get into some of the nooks and crannies and reach right in there and just crush it and pulverize it and eat the soft tissue that's inside of a small oyster or clam or barnacles in particular. But crabs are probably the primarily most sought after bait that there is to use for them, and most people throughout the whole state want fiddler crabs. And that's because that's one of the primary baits that's usually readily available for commercial sale versus some of your other species of crabs that are small, like your mangrove crabs and your mud crabs, not as easily available. A lot of guys will go out and try to catch those, you know, by walking through the mangroves and shaking the branches and getting some of them out of there, or flipping rocks, which isn't real easy to come by in Florida in general. Plus, it's extremely dangerous. You know, guys that go out there and are flipping over small rocks to try to find some of those mud crabs, you can cut yourself really bad on a lot of those oysters and barnacles. And the other thing that is also a problem when they're doing that is that mud crabs and stone crabs look very, very similar.
Yeah.
And taking a stone crab for bait is totally 100% illegal. And some of these people aren't aware of that, and a lot of people aren't aware of the differences. And I honestly can't tell you the difference between the two. has
man,
something
I was
to
looking
do
forward to learning it.
Has something to do with the tip of their claw with the clarity. One's got like more of a clearer tip and the other one's got a black tip on it.
Okay.
But I don't remember which direction it goes with that, so I don't want to misinform, but it's something that people should be informed enough if they're going to go out and harvest their own crabs. They need to be aware of what they're doing so they aren't breaking the law. You know, and, you know, a lot of people are under the misbelief that you can't catch them on anything but crabs, and yet shrimp are the primary number one sought after food item for them as far as being able to go to bait shops and pick it up. Because not everybody carries fiddler crabs, and sometimes they're very difficult to get because if you have extreme cold fronts, crabs tend to kind of go into a little bit of a dormant stage where they hide inside the, you know, under the mud, and you just can't get them. And sometimes it's several days. And when you're dealing with only a handful of places that get fiddler crabs for commercial sale to bait shops, you're dealing with all the entire state of Florida has sheep's head at the same time, so you're only able to supply so many bait shops at a time.
Yeah.
So it becomes very difficult. We'll sometimes go a month and a half up to 2 months and not be able to get them, but recently Frank found a place that is actually commercial farming them now.
Nice.
Which should help us get them more consistently, plus that helps reduce the impact on the environment as far as taking them from the wild, because they are getting more and more scarce because of development and beach erosion, stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's kind of nice to actually have a way to get them being commercially farm raised.
The few places that I've actually found them in the wild, kind of a pain to get to and a pain to get them.
Well, and that's why they're still there.
Yeah.
You know, that one time, you know, 30 years ago, a lot of these beaches throughout all of Southwest Florida, you find any mud flat along a mangrove shoreline and it would, the ground would crawl with them.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore because of people taking them. So it's a little frustrating, but still awesome nonetheless that we can get them the other way.
For sure.
And they're easy to keep alive. You know, fiddler crabs you can actually keep alive sometimes for 3 or 4 days just by keeping them in a bucket with some moist sand or a little tiny splash of water in the bottom of the bucket.
In a in a bucket full of water, it's less of a chance that
they'll drown.
Oh, okay.
You actually want just a little tiny splash of water on the bottom for them to be able to stick their face down in and blow bubbles to keep their gills moist.
Because
they have little gills in their in the front of their face, and if they can keep that moist, they can pull in the oxygen from the air over that moisture and absorb it, but they're too dumb to lift their head out of the water to get the air. And plus, fiddler crabs are primarily a land-based animal, so they're not used to being submerged all the time. They need a place to get out.
So how am I going to hook my fiddler crabs up to my hook, and what hook am I using?
Well,
I know you had talked about how they have molars and they have a tendency to crush what they're eating rather than just suck it in. So they can be kind of a notorious bait stealer and a little frustrating, you know, especially if you're trying to be a little conservative on bait. But I don't think that you need a circle hook for them unless you're fishing from a vessel legally.
Right.
So.
Right.
A small J hook or an octopus style hook, maybe a size 2 or a size 1.
And how am I hooking the fiddler crab?
Through the body, I would think.
Yeah, most of the time you're going through the leg joint.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the softer spots to start your point coming through into the body. And then, honestly, with most fiddler crabs, they're usually about the size of a dime as far as their body goes. Some are the size of a nickel, but pretty small overall, so you're going to end up skewering their internals and killing them anyhow.
Okay.
So I just put it through a leg joint, and then I come out right through the center part of the shell, because it's going to die anyway.
Yeah.
I haven't found an exact way to be able to hook them on to keep them alive for any long period of time, but if the sheep's head are there, it doesn't last long anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Chandler was saying, that they are notorious for being bait thieves. You know, one nickname for sheep's head is, you know, a bandit fish or a jail fish. trying to think whatever else the other name is. It's I forget. Brain just went to junk. But basically, they're white, black stripe, white stripe, black stripe, all the way down their whole body. So
got the jailbird colors.
Yeah, they got the old school jailhouse stripes on them. So, and it kind of keys in on because they are very notorious for being bait thieves. You know, there's a lot of joking in the industry with catching sheep's head is that in order to catch them successfully, you've got to count to three but set the hook on two. And there's, you know, not really some truth to it, but you really don't have much opportunity than that one hit because they usually will hit it and then your bait's done. They've taken it off the hook, and whether it's a 6-inch sheep's head or an 18-inch sheep's head, they're just little nibblers. Even though they got those giant teeth on them and stuff, you would think mm-hmm. that they would hit pretty hard. And a lot of times they just, all you feel is doot-doot real quick and it's done. Your bait's gone. So one trick that I have found is I stick with a slightly smaller hook. I stick with like a number 4 or a number 2. I won't go usually any bigger than that. But what I also like to do is take a piece of fish bites, mm-hmm. which is a artificial enzyme-enhanced bait, and I'll use the crab or the clam or the sand flea or the bloodworm flavor, any of those, and I'll put just a little tiny piece on first, and then I'll add the fiddler crab or the piece of frozen shrimp, because I use both. You know, because sometimes fiddler crabs just aren't available. So I just use frozen shrimp. I peel the shell off the shrimp. I like to set the shrimp on the dock and let it dry out for a couple minutes, and it becomes a little bit more rubbery. And then I just take a piece, maybe the size of my thumbnail, just enough to cover the barb of the hook, and put it on there. And my fish bites is already on there, too. So if they steal my shrimp or crab, I've still got that fish bites, which is very hard to get off of a hook, and that sometimes gets them to come back that second or even third shot, so I have an extra better chance of hooking one of those guys.
More so than putting the bait on first and then the fish bites after, so that the fish bites is the first thing that the sheep's head.
Yeah, I mean that works too, but they're usually so good about taking that off the hook that I find that just having it on there for the second, you know, putting it on mm-hmm. first and then the natural bait on last tends to get them to come back and not peel it off as easily, because they'll still steal it off the shank of the hook.
Okay.
They're that good of thieves, you know, and a lot of times we fish for them standing on piers mm-hmm. and docks, so you're almost fishing them extremely vertical. You know, and when you're doing that, I like to use a little bit longer rod, and, you know, like at least a 7-foot rod, and usually something fairly stiff, not something I would normally use for snook fishing or red fishing. I'm going to use something like a 10 to 20 or even a 15 to 25 pound stiffer action rod. Like for anybody up north, it would probably be something equivalent to almost a musky rod.
Yeah.
And I like using monofilament on them because monofilament's more abrasion resistant than braided line. So I'm just going to use 12 or 15 pound test monofilament, but I'm going to use like a 30 pound monofilament leader. And the rig that I like to use is actually, I like to use a chicken rig or a dropper rig where my sinker is on the bottom, and about 6 inches above that, I've got either a 3-way swivel or I make a loop coming off of my leader. But a 3-way swivel is one of the easiest ones. Your main line comes down to the top of your 3-way swivel. The bottom swivel has your sinker that hangs down about 6 inches off of a piece of line. And then I only use about a foot long piece of leader coming off of the other side of my 3-way swivel, because then I'm able to hold it vertical and right up against those pilings as close as possible to it, because those sheep's head will move up and down the pilings looking for little critters and feeding on the barnacles. And my bait's there, but I'm leaning against the railing with my rod tip kind of pointed downward towards the water. And then as soon as I feel that bite, I'm just lifting straight up. But since it's a 7-foot rod, you know, I'm fishing fairly close to pilings, my rod tip might be 4 or 5 feet away from the piling, but when I lift up, I'm now 7 feet up, but I'm pulling that fish away from the pilings at the same time. Because the first thing they want to do is try to circle around that piling to escape, and you get broke off. So I like to have that little bit of leverage. That's why I use a stiffer rod and a little bit longer rod for them, so I can kind of pull them away from the dock, since I'm fishing essentially right underneath my feet.
And that heavier leader is to give the line more of a chance against the barnacles?
Yeah, and that's the other reason why I like the monofilament for the main line, too, because even if I'm using that shorter leader on there, they can sometimes get up close enough to those pilings, and they'll break off. Even 50-pound braided line just cuts on those barnacles like it's nothing, versus 15-pound mono holds up a lot better and gives me a chance to land them. You know, and then ideally is you want to have a bridge net or a long telescopic net to reach down to them to bring them up with, because some of them can be pretty sizable, and trying to lift them up by hand, by pulling line through your hand and lifting them up. One, you can cut your hands. Two, it can be very, very difficult to get that fish as he's flopping around. Sometimes they'll pull the hook or just break the line just under that sheer weight of them flopping and hopping around.
They're a fairly dense fish for their size, too, when they get to keeper size at least.
Yeah, extremely. Convict fish is the other name for them. That was the main name I was trying to remember.
Yeah, the other advantage of the drop shot or the chicken rig, too, is with the hook above the weight, you have more of a tendency to feel the bite than if the weight's above the hook. So you get a better shot at actually hooking that fish, or that's my understanding of it.
No, absolutely, you know, because you're in more direct contact with it, because with your sinker up above, which works fine, which is known as like a Carolina rig or a typical Florida rig, you know, that egg sinker up on top, that fish has to grab a hold of the bait first, and he feels the weight before you feel him.
Yeah.
Because the weight is in between you and the fish. Versus with the sinker on the bottom, you tend to know the fish is there at the same time as he knows you're there, so you stand a much better chance of landing them. And you were saying that you don't have to use a circle hook, and it's one of the few instances where I kind of like a circle hook, but I'm not using a true circle hook. I mean, one of the number one hooks for sheep's head fishing for the last 75 years is a Mustad. It's a gold hook. It's a medium to long shank hook. I don't remember the model number off the top of my head. I want to say it's like a 9174 or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but it's a fairly thick shanked hook. It's not a thin wire hook like you would use for bluegill, but it looks similar to the bluegill hook, just on steroids. That's been the hook that they've used forever for sheep's head.
It's the one that's kind of like the snook hook, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
So it's similar to that, but the one that I really like to use is an Owner Mutu Light circle hook. And it's actually kind of it's not a true circle hook in the definition of circle hooks, but they call it that. And what it is, it's an offset hook, and it's almost a modified Cayley hook. And a Cayley hook is something that a lot of freshwater anglers are notorious for using for minnows and shiners. It's a wide gap, really long swooping bottom hook with the barb only coming up a little ways and then bending back towards itself. It's got kind of an odd shape to it, but that Mutu Light circle has been, I think I improved my hookup ratio on sheep's head by at least 25%.
Gotcha.
You know, a customer showed me that at least 15 years ago, and it was amazing how much of a difference it made with my hookup ratio on those fish.
Yeah. And it's got that, when you say it's different than a circle hook or a traditional circle hook, excuse me, instead of having that kind of C shape, it's got a very sharp bend in it, and it's got almost like a check mark kind of hook on the end before the barb.
Yeah, it's just an interesting hook. Basically, you could look it up, but if you look up a wide gap hook that they use for shiner fishing and then look up an Owner Mutu Light circle hook, you'll see that it's pretty darn close to that and hybridized a little bit. It's kind of like it's almost like a J hook and a circle hook had a good Friday night, and this is the hook they came up with. It works extremely well.
Right on. I'll have to give that a try.
You know, it's just something different. You know, it's not the answer, but it is another answer, and it's a good one to try out compared to so many hooks, because it's very, very confusing. And then also we get us a lot of times this time of year when we get our northern guests that are coming down, or family members are just on short visits that are going out to try to fish for sheep's head. I've had quite a few people every winter say, well, I should just use a treble hook. And the problem with using a treble hook is that it's illegal.
Yeah.
In the state of Florida, it is illegal to use a treble hook in conjunction with natural bait.
Really?
Yep. For any species. Hmm. You can use a treble hook on a lure, but the moment you put like a shrimp on a treble hook, it now becomes illegal.
So I've seen hooks that aren't a single hook, and they're not a treble hook. They have two hooks.
Uh-huh.
What about those?
It's a gray area there with that one. Because there is one that's actually called a shrimp harness.
Yeah.
And that wraps around the carapace of the shrimp and allows you to fish that way with essentially two shanks and two barbs attached to each mm-hmm. other at the nose. And it's never been enforced that I'm aware of, but I don't know if that would be legal, because they actually define, I think if I remember right, because it's been so long since I've looked that exact rule up, it specifies treble hook or gang hook, you know, so no hooks at all with that.
And it's no treble hooks just because there's been a lot of fish that have died because of the catch and release.
I think it becomes an unfair chase at that point, because you're using natural bait on it, mm-hmm. and you could snag them just about anywhere inside their mouth, throat, or whatever when you have multiple hooks like that, versus the single hook is much easier to deal with when they swallow a bait. I don't know really what the reasoning is, to be honest. Okay. But it works well, because, I mean, there's a lot of fish that benefit from not having to have all those hooks stuck in their face, like, you know, shark fishing, mackerel fishing, you know, some of our other catch and release fish, if it was snook or redfish, which have been in emergency closure now this year, you know, it would be a little less mortality rate.
So I could fish a treble with fish bites on it?
Yep.
Yeah, and gulp.
Yeah, with gulp or fish bites, which is a artificial bait, it's not a problem to do. So it's something to think about, but, I mean, every year people ask that question, and I always mm-hmm. have to educate them on it. You know, and, you know, one thing about that we need to talk about, too, with the sheep's head is that anytime you're fishing in Southwest Florida for any fish, especially if you're going to keep them to eat them, is you don't want to use a stringer down here, because hanging them off that stringer is sometimes fine for a little bit, but the moment that fish dies, people got to remember it's 85 degree air temperature, 75 or better water temperature a lot of times. Your fish sits there on the surface and cooks and spoils. So if you're planning on keeping fish, you really need to lug an ice chest with you out there and put the fish immediately on ice.
Yeah.
Or else you'll be spoiling any of your fish that you decide to keep. But since sheep's head are so highly prized for food value and can be caught readily, having that ice chest with you at all times will make it much, much better, and you're not just wasting a fish or multiple fish.
You're also running into maybe losing them to shark, alligators, and otters.
Otters for sure. Jewfish or Goliath grouper are another one, and the sharks for sure. Alligators, not so much in the wintertime on those. Other species of fish throughout the year, yes. But It is very possible for an alligator. I'm not disputing that fact, but once it gets into wintertime, you start to see far fewer alligators, but the otters become very, very active in some areas.
So what's the flavor like?
It's a super mild fish. It's in the porgy family. I don't even know how to describe it. It's a very nice flaky meat. It's not snow white by any means. It's a little off-white, more like eggshell color.
Yeah.
But because they primarily feed on crustaceans, makes them pretty good eating. I mean, a lot of people like them, but they're very hard to clean because they have very large scales and very big bones in them. So if you take your time cleaning them, you can get a lot of good meat out of them. And for me personally, I tell a lot of people actually to scale them and just eat them on the, with the skin on, you know, bake them, broil them, grill them, however, but the skin on them, you get a lot more meat out of it, and it's amazing how much meat you can get out of one of those little guys.
Well, thank you. I think we're out of time today.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be back with Shorelines another time.